I'm Mike Asnald, and welcome to the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge's AC23 Plus Artist Legacy Series podcast. This is a series where we talk to artists who are doing amazing things in the areas of the arts, including performance, education, production, as well as arts advocacy. We record this series in the Virginia and John Nolan Black Box Studio, as well as in the Jan and Bill Grimes Recording Studio here at the Cary Siraj Community Arts Center. Be sure to visit artsbr.org for more information on all the great things we are doing here at the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge. Hope you enjoy the podcast series, and thanks for tuning in.
Did you ever wonder how it feels to be a clown when they kicked you out and they put you down? Lord, it's so lonely, and there ain't nothing funny about feeling down when you're just a clown. I played love with a gambler's hand. I had a full house, till she made with another man. Lord, it's so lonely, and there ain't nothing funny about feeling down when you're just a clown. Yeah. Some people might think a clown's life is all funny games, but the smile, it's a frown turned upside down, and it's such a shame. I've been a fool for so long, feeling down, down, down. Don't you worry, I'll be on my way. I'll take a train out of Baton Rouge and hit the big top someday. Lord, it's so lonely, and there ain't nothing funny about feeling down when you're just a clown.
Mr. Chris LeBlanc.
Right on, man.
Welcome, Chris.
Thank you for having me, man.
I'd like to welcome all of our AC23 Plus Artist Legacy Series listeners and viewers to another session. I'm Mike Asnault, Director of Arts and Education here at the Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge. And today I have one of the sweetest people I know and one of the baddest musicians I know. And I'm not making that up. That's for real. Mr. Chris LeBlanc. It's a real
thank
pleasure
you.
Having you here, man.
Oh, man, thank you, man. I feel the same about you, man. You're incredible.
Well, no, thank you. But, dude, you've been such a big part of the music community, not just in Baton Rouge, of course a big part of Baton Rouge, but regionally, nationally, and I just wanted to I invited you here because I wanted to talk to you about that and just get to know, let the listeners know, but me as well, about how you came to it and what you've been up to and what you're excited about. So
right on, man.
So where are you originally from, Chris?
This is my hometown. Baton Rouge is my hometown, born and raised here.
Yeah.
And, you know, grew up in the city and went to school here sometimes. I'm lying. Man, I went to school all day. But, you know, growing up playing here and kind of, my family's really was musical, you know, my dad and his brothers, and then it comes on my mother's side as well. Her brothers were all musicians that were really instrumental kind of in, like, getting me to come up playing music.
Right.
And, you know, just come really from, like, hard-working people. My dad was a musician but also worked really hard in the plants and wherever else. And he didn't want me to go work in a plant. He didn't want me to do it just because he wanted me to play music. I think that
so he wanted you to be a musician.
He wanted me to play music. He always supported me.
Wow.
It was one of these things where he just was like always pressing, always inspiring me. I'd be around family that was playing music. They played music, you know. I came up really kind of playing in settings that would be where there's family, you know, there's family around. And my grandparents wanted to hear a lot of old country music and stuff.
Yeah,
so we would play Tennessee Waltz
and
a lot of Hank Williams songs.
So y'all would be physically playing in the house.
Playing, yeah, like we'd be playing guitars and sitting around.
Wow.
Whether it was at a, you know, and it always, I think that that's kind of the reason that the music, I gravitated towards it, because I didn't actually start going out and playing gigs. I was just playing music because of music's sake, you know.
Right,
and,
right.
And then playing really, and being around people who were, they loved it. You know, we wanted to be pleasing. I think that's one of the things that that was such a key part of being a musician, is like playing to be good, but to be pleasing. You know, I wanted to please my family by this, you know, and please crowds. And then it became that, you know, it became, as I got into schooling and a little, I think maybe fourth grade, I joined school band.
Sure.
And played trumpet. I wanted to play saxophone, but we went to go get a saxophone, and even in 1978, a alto saxophone was $600 or something.
Yeah, you know? They're not cheap. Yeah.
They're not cheap. Mm-hmm. And I saw my dad kind of wince, and I was like, how much is a trumpet? $300. So I got the trumpet, and what I learned about it was it basically just got my head into the music. It wasn't about the instrument. Mm-hmm. It's about being a piece of this thing.
Yeah.
And at the same time, my first instrument was, I picked up the bass guitar, really. I was a bass player first and then played drums. I actually played guitar last.
Wow.
I did. Yeah. I didn't start really getting serious about guitar until I was maybe 19 or 20.
That surprises me.
It is. Yeah, it really is one of those things where I was a bass player, and but through band, you know, going back to like being in school band, I stayed in school band all the way through elementary school, junior high school.
Mm-hmm.
Did it all, you know. I was a trumpet player, then I played baritone, I played French horn, I played.
So you were like in the wind ensembles and the marching bands and all that.
Marching band, symphonic band, jazz band, a cappella choir, show choir, everything you could do music is what I did.
Beautiful.
Everything. Yeah. I just completely surrounded it.
Quick shout out to schools that still have music programs, just how important that is.
Absolutely. I have a lot of friends who are educators who they are, I'm so inspired by them, you know. Mm-hmm. I really wish that I could move forward and teach in a lot of, I really would love to just work with up and coming musicians who are wanting to find the right thing. You know, it's the one thing that with cool music, coming up, digging cool music and listening to it and then playing it and playing with a lot of people who were very good and inspiring. It's got to be good. I got to believe it, you know.
Right.
I got to believe it. If I don't believe it, I can't get into it, you know.
I find it interesting, you know, in different people that I interview, those early years are different for a lot of people, but those who are blessed to grow up in an environment at home where music is being played, and or if not being played, at least listened to a lot. But in the situation where you're playing with your family, that's such a gift because, you know, for a lot of people, music doesn't start until they get to school. And it's almost like this separate thing. Whereas you grew up, it's just like walking. I mean, you're just doing it all the time, right?
Right.
And there's no real delineation. It's just the whole.
Right. It is every day. It's with the ones I love. It's around people that are, as I was a teenager, and being a bass player, there was musicians around my family, a lot of my dad's friends, some of their friends. They knew I had a skill set as a teenager. They would it's the 80s, they'd give me a couple of cassette tapes. Mm-hmm. I learned all their songs. They want me on the gig because I'm sober. I'm a straight kid who's going and take care of business and go and play music. And you know, so I grew up around a lot of adults like that. Yeah. I was playing around grown-ups, mm-hmm. even as I was like a teenager and still played with rock and roll kids around me. I was always working with people who were older than me who expected a certain level of protocol, performance, everything. And that's what I did. I just delivered it, you know.
I remember coming up, learning to play, and one of my teachers, well, actually a band director, told me this early on, and I took it to heart, and it's meant a lot to me. He said, always try to play with people who are older and better than you.
Absolutely.
And as soon as you put yourself in that situation, number one, there's going to be some level of uncomfortableness because they're better than you. Like, yes. You know, they're going to push you, and that allows you to grow. If you're too comfortable, you know, you can still play great music, but you might not be growing a whole lot.
I know.
You know what I'm saying?
Ain't that something? It's like growing pains go hand in hand. It's a it's a thing. It's like, it's completely life now. It's like, even now at our age, I'm seeing, and it's like, if I'm not in pain, which life inherently is pain and suffering. If I'm not feeling that, I'm not living where I should be living. Mm-hmm. And I mean it you got to go through a whole lot of hell to get to paradise sometimes.
Sure.
And it's like this, man. And it's like, you know, the condition of the musician in today's modern world is a very tough spot to be oftentimes, you know, when you're, no matter what level or who you're working with, the worth of it has to start within.
Sure.
It has to start within. And I believed at that. I really believe that it's like, no matter what is going on in the world, no matter what's being played on the radio or what you hear in the world, that level of where you want to live at as a musician starts there.
Right.
It starts here, and it can only be satisfied by your own, like, drive to go to that place. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been so driven to be a performer, like mm-hmm. bring it, you know, and it's like with that, there's a lot of pressure that comes along with that.
Sure.
Because you have to, there's an expectation in the public of who I am. They don't know who I am. They just think they know who you are as a musician. But this expectation, it's with that, with everybody. It's with mm-hmm. athletes. It's with artists. It's with a doctor.
Sure.
You know, you're dependent on a doctor to save your life. And he's like, I hope I can save this dude's life.
Right, right. That's deep.
It's that, you know. So, you know, being a musician and playing has been such a unbelievable undertaking in life, man, that, you know, it is so much fun at times. It's mm-hmm. so fun, man. It's
yeah.
like,
yeah.
it's pleasing, you know. It goes back to that part of it pleases you. It pleases others. It's beautiful, you know.
Well, you said something early on about playing in the context of your family and the drive to please those yeah. you're playing music with. But I think that impulse, that instinct is a great one for a performer especially
yeah.
to have. Because ultimately what you're talking about is communicating. Communicating yeah. with the listener, the other band members, you know, and a lot of people miss, you know, we've worked with a lot of different musicians and some kind of miss the boat on that. Like it's more about they're so self-indulged in what they're doing and
right.
they're not concerned about that other part.
Right.
But to me, the whole point
is to be
that connection.
The connection.
But to have that at such an early age, to have that impulse and that, and to feel that.
Yeah.
That's a gift. I mean, that's
it really
it's a
is.
Blessing.
And to be dependent upon the people around you, you know, like I never was a person that wanted to like spot another musician out. Like we're playing. A lot of times, dude, I've been in a place, man, where you go and play with someone, and you're like, I don't know where these guys are. I don't know where it is.
Sure.
And
yeah.
and at that point, like. Some people just do their thing and you have to go along with it.
Sure.
But I've always been one that's like, okay, I could be like, you know what, I'm not gonna leave this dude out to leave his cheese in
the
wind.
You're a team player.
Yeah, I'm not gonna leave his cheese in the wind. Right. I'm gonna play something that we all can have fun on,
yeah.
play and
yeah.
share, because in the end, that's really all the dudes that I ever dug to watch. You know, growing up in Baton Rouge and growing up younger, there were some so cool bluesy rock and roll musicians.
I want you to, you know, this series
yeah.
is about, you know, the Legacy series, and talk to that, like the scene that you were seeing coming up, the people that inspired you, like who are some people that really kind of.
Like guys that I would watch and play, I mean, it was so wide. It was like I would go to these festivals. I would be working at some of these festivals that were Blues Fest here and watching guys play like the Neal Family.
Oh, yeah.
They're so amazing.
Yeah.
And their family, you mm-hmm. see, that's kind of like
right.
they always – it was so kindred – and so, like, when I'm younger and becoming friends, the first Neal family member I became friends with was Darnell Neal, who plays bass.
Mm-hmm.
And then started being on the scene and getting to know all the family. Then, dude, I'm 20 years old in 1989.
Yeah.
Or, you know, 21.
Mm-hmm.
I would go across the river to the Starlight Diamond Lounge and go hang and go play with them, because that's where the coolest music was happening for me. I was going to go and, like, get something. And I was, you know, sitting there playing with Rafael Neal.
Yeah.
He's blowing the harmonica. And then, I believed it. Like, With music, I have to believe it. If I don't believe it, it's out.
Yeah.
I believed it. All mm-hmm. these guys that I was watching and playing, I was really inspired. And then there's like, there was a rock and roll scene here that there was a lot of great players and a lot of people that I learned a lot from. You know, I recorded my first couple of records with Wendell.
Yeah, Wendell Tilley.
And we worked together a lot, man. He really, when I was, you know, I didn't really pick up the guitar until I was around him, mm-hmm. you know.
Heck like, of a guitar player.
And he's amazing. And he really helped me he's the one who kind of took time. We spent a lot of time together, but he knew that I wanted to get better. And he just started, you know, we just hung out all the time.
Right.
And he just started shedding on me, and I would listen and show me, and there's a lot of other guys around. Jeff Johnson was another great guitar mm-hmm. player around here. It was really good. There's so many. But, you know, watching incredible musicians, you know, people that you got to see and just were inspired to lift you to become a better player. And then when there's so many of them around back then, the competition to go in, there is a competitive element mm-hmm. when you're trying to go get a gig.
Sure.
And there's so many players and so many musicians there. You're trying to get a gig, and they're like, sorry, we have enough bands. Have a good day, Chris.
Right.
They don't care who you are, how good you are. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And so that part of it was like, I'm not gonna stop. I don't care. You can tell me no a million times, and I'm looking for one yes.
Right.
And that's who I am. I'm never, if I'm in the corner of the ring and I'm beat down, I'm coming out swinging.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, I must. We have to. I mean, that's survival. You know?
There's that, and, you know, there's no mistaking that you, myself, and so many other people we know, we love it too much.
Yes.
You know.
I mean,
You have to do it.
And then, like, as a teenager, like, I was working jobs where I would go work. It's the mid-80s, mm-hmm. and they're like, you make $20 a day. Mm-hmm. So that's $100 a week.
Right.
I go make $100 in one night playing a gig.
Right.
I'm like, I know what I'm going to do.
And it's a lot more fun.
Yes, a lot more fun. And I can do this a couple of times a week, and I'm making 3 and 4 times the money I would go and waste a whole week.
Right.
You know, so it's like, that's the one thing that I was like, you figure out. I think being a musician, like, helped me to figure out how to, like, survive. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you never have, like, a solid gig somewhere. It's just for a minute, you know. You're like, you got to keep on. I played a million places. I played more gigs than anybody I know.
Right, right.
It's like, so, and for the, I mean, I'm 56 years old, but I'm, you know, when I think about it, like, I started playing gigs 40 years ago.
Right, yeah.
That's like a lot of shows. I mean, there mm-hmm. was like a period of time where I was playing over 200 shows a year or something, 250 right. shows a year for like 10 years straight, mm-hmm. you know, and it was a lot, you know, 10, 15 years. And, I'm glad I did it when I was young, you know what I mean? I say when I did it, just to be able to do it is the gift, you know?
Right, right. And you have a certain stamina level at that age.
That's right, man. You got a lot of energy. And I think, you know, as we're getting older, I think it's always so sweet to, like, be one of these musicians. I look at people who are, like, stylists. You know, there's, like, musicians, there's people who can play everything, but those are the ones who, like, have a sound.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, you have, if you have a sound, then you're...
Well, that's Chris LeBlanc. In case you didn't know it, I'm just pointing that out, but you know that.
I'm still trying to figure it, you know. It's like, at the same time, you know, it's like, everybody, if you're a musician who is searching, you're trying to get that. One of my buddies told me a cool, you know, here we are, musicians telling stories. But
go ahead.
One of my buddies told me that he was in an airport, and he saw Miles Davis.
Oh, wow.
In the airport.
Man.
And my friend's a drummer. And so he's like, I've got to go talk to Miles Davis. So he walks up to Miles Davis, and he's like, man, I just want to say, you know, I'm so-and-so. I'd love to meet you. Your music's incredible. Thank you for everything, you know, your contributions. And Miles says, well, what do you play? And he says, I play drums. And he's like, Miles says, do you have a sound? And it was the biggest question he had ever been asked in his life.
Yeah.
Do you have a sound?
Right.
And like, that is what we're all going for.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, it's oftentimes it can be easier if you have a voice that you're doing it. As a drummer, that could be tough.
Different parameters, but yeah.
Yeah, different, yeah. But still.
Yeah.
I mean, Buddy Rich had a sound.
Oh, yeah. There's so many drummers. When you hear them, you know Steve Gadd.
Yeah,
just
Steve
his
Gadd.
Kick drum has a sound.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So everybody can do it. It's just like, how are you going to get to that, you know?
Yeah.
And I finally feel like in my life, man, you know, by this time, if I ain't on my way to it, I should have stopped a minute ago, you know.
Well, look, we're talking about music, obviously, but let's play some music.
Yeah, let's play.
So man. What you got, man?
Well, actually,
let's backtrack a little bit. So we started out with one of your tunes, and what was the name of that one?
That's called Just a Clown.
Just a Clown.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Is there a story behind that, or...?
Yeah, I wrote it some years ago, and then it come true. So, you know, you find out who's a clown, you know.
Right, right. Life has a way of revealing things.
Truth is always stranger than its fiction,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I think these moments, you know, sometimes these songs, you know, they just come out. This one, I was thinking about doing this one here, Deliver Me, which is kind of like a spiritual vibe tune. It's one of these tunes that I thought to myself, I almost wanted to like, I was thinking of like, what would be like a defining song for somebody, or what's their trying to, you know, reach this place of connectivity of the gift that's given to you in a song. Like this tune, this is one of these tunes that I just, in a minute, it's not hard, but what happens is, like, if you're cultivating something in your brain, whatever's going in there, it's just, it starts to happen, and there's always, people always, well, they question, like, the process. Is it words first? Is it music first? Is it none of that? It's all, like, you're only taking what you're being given. Mm-hmm. Like, something outside of you. I had a friend of mine that was saying, you know, he says when a song idea comes to your mind, you should kind of abide the universe a little bit to take the second to see if it's worth the time to do this.
Right.
And because it could not or it could be.
Right.
You know, and it's like I just listened to the universe tell me one day, I think, you know, it's not crazy words, but it's like I wrote this tune in like 10 minutes or something.
Well, that brings up a point. Are you one that thinks that more or less the tune is kind of written and you're finding it?
I think
you're carving it out, but it's there. Like it's.
I think a lot like that. I really do, because, I mean, you can. There's times in my life where I sat down with people and we had the writing sesh, and things come out of it, I guess, that's all right. But I also believe that, like, if you're moving through, if you're manufacturing, if we are manufacturing our own reality, then you can feed something that the universe says, oh, here. Right. And then, boom, then you're getting these thoughts. Like, my thoughts now more are like, I will, like, talk text words and just things that are coming into my mind that are that are lyrical, that I wish I could do it more, you know, like guys like you have this huge wide range to construct all, you know, orchestrate all these pieces, and that comes together for people. And I just think it kind of all comes to people how it does, you
sure.
know?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, to be kind of simple and write some blues to something. I mean, someone wrote, I'm a man, I'm a rolling stone.
Right, right.
I'm a hoochie coochie man. You know, I mean, think of it. It's like, he's just rapping. Like Muddy Waters is the first rapper.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Howlin' Wolf. All of them, dude. They're the first, like, dropping the lines, the message, boom, boom. Just, it's like, however it comes, whatever's coming to you, you got to kind of abide it, you know.
But when it comes from a very inspired place, usually something that's happening in life with you.
Yeah.
That I kind of feel being in those situations, those more adverse situations, those tough things, situations, it makes you more in touch with your emotions,
yes.
which makes you more in touch with what you're trying to get out musically.
Yeah. You
know, I want to say easier. No, it's not easy, but it's...
Yeah.
But it's more accessible, maybe.
That's right. And there's a, you know, I think, too, there's like an urgency sometimes in my mind about, I got to do this. I got to get it done. I got to... Because how much time you got to get it done?
Right.
So it's like you're trying to find that pathway as fast as you can, because everybody in music, everybody wants, that's the one thing, everybody wants like the finished product, but they don't know what it took to get there,
right?
And it's a lot, man.
It's a whole lot.
Yeah, it's a whole lot of hell.
The more easy you make it look, the more hours you probably put in.
yes.
Well, Deliverance.
Yeah,
let's do this one, man.
Yeah. So this is one called Deliver Me. You want to try
Deliver
it?
Me.
Okay. We could do it together, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to let you play through it once, and then I'm going to get it.
Yeah. If I climb to that mountaintop and I fail on bending knees, would you hear praise and glory as I sing this litany? Oh, deliver me, yes, my Father, please deliver me by your hand, like a star that's cast from stone, I'm gonna shine in your promised land. Well, my friends, are you listening for the times are drawing near? Keep your faith, hope, and love while the signs are oh so clear. Oh, deliver me, yes, my Father. Please deliver me by your hand, like a star that's cast from stone, I'm gonna shine in your promised land. Searching for oh so long, and the world could soon be listening as I sing for you my song. Oh, deliver me, yes, my Father. Please deliver me by your hand, like a star that's cast from stone. I'm gonna shine in your promised land. Let me shine in your promised land.
Wow, Chris, that's beautiful, man.
Thank you,
beautiful.
Man. Thank you.
Well, so we've talked a lot about, you know, how you came to music and developing in music, starting to gig and all that stuff. You know, what are you up to now? I want to mention a couple of things first for the listeners and viewers. You are in the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame.
Yes, I got inducted in 2018.
Well, congratulations.
Which was pretty cool, man. Thank you.
Well, and totally well deserved.
Thank you, man. I'm so very thankful, man. I'm thankful to be recognized just in any way like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real blessing. And you know, I have a mission in my life, I believe. I want to go and, like, however I can to go and play music honest and represent Louisiana somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Because Louisiana is a Mount Rushmore of amazing musicians.
Oh, no. No kidding.
I mean, yeah. It is the Mount Rushmore, mm-hmm, of musicians.
Especially when you think about, you know, I was having this discussion earlier with a mutual friend of ours, Rob Payer, about how so much the roots of music, and you have all these types of genres now, call it what you will.
Yeah.
But at the base of that, of whatever genre it is, if you're thinking about the roots of music, you can trace it back almost entirely to a large portion of it to Louisiana. When you talk about the blues,
yes,
jazz, the Cajun Zydeco traditions,
yes,
gospel, you know, yes, it's all here in South Louisiana.
It is no doubt. I mean, Roy Brown, Fats Domino, mm-hmm, Louis Armstrong, I mean, When they called me to let me know that they were going to induct me into the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame, I was like, okay, you got to give me a minute here. I need to think about what this really is, you know?
The club that you're joining.
Yeah, this thing, you know?
Right.
And then it's I go and look at who it is, and I'm like, I was like, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
And I didn't take it lightly. I don't take it lightly now.
Yeah.
So, without a doubt, man, like, I got to own up to this, you know? I got to.
Yeah.
It is that, you know? And so, like, it's such a blessing that, like, I'm just glad it happened while I'm alive, which is cool. that I can be a representative at some level.
Right.
That it would, you know, that it would be, that it would count that much more somehow, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is.
Right. Well, and, you know, to that point, those kind of honors should go to people who, and like you're showing me right now, who really understand the gravitas of that.
Yes.
I mean, you know, that's a real, real honor.
It is.
Louisiana Music Hall of Fame.
Right. Right. It's like, yeah, man. And you know, right now I'm one of the parts of my life that I find a lot of value in is being a part of that, as well as like helping to move forward with the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame to put in deserving people who need to be in this, because mm-hmm. It is, I always wanted to do it the right way. I want to do things the right way that way. And there's a lot of people who are not in the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame that need to be.
Oh, sure.
I mean, really, man, really. Yeah. And it's like, I would love to serve as that mission somehow, mm-hmm. you know, to be a voice that would say, hey.
Right.
You know, because 'cause it lifts people to continue their thing. Mm-hmm. I would keep doing what I'm doing, but now, like, again, when you have a responsibility to it.
Sure.
Then you kind of feel like you kind of owe something to the people of who kind of gave this, you know.
Absolutely. In addition to that, you've done 4 albums.
I did. I made, over the years, I made 4 records that I recorded, and one or two of them are out on streaming right now, and I'm kind of connecting dots right now, getting these records out there a little bit more to, mm-hmm. there's always, you know, new technology, and now there's so many avenues to try to get everything, so I made these records on my, you know, with some trusted friends, you
sure.
know,
yeah.
who, and yeah, I put them out on my own label. My first one went out in 1995, then another in 98, another in 2001, and then another in 2006. And at that time, I was so busy playing shows and recording all this music and work, and then I had a family, you know, family sure. man, have a son and do, and so I kind of put off working on my own stuff in a way, just because I got sessions to go play on other people's mm-hmm. stuff. That was really cool
right.
and fun and interesting, and
yeah.
was always like, okay, this is cool. I'm going to do this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so now, over the last couple of years, I did a bunch of recording, and I'm sitting on like a record now that is, it sounds so good, but I just kind of...
What you waiting on, man?
I know, right? Everybody's saying, what are you waiting on? It sounds so good.
Well, now you're making it worse. Like, come on, bro.
I know. it sounds so really nice, and it's like, I know, what am I waiting on?
What are you waiting on?
What am I waiting on?
I'm going to start a club. Chris, get that album out, club.
Chris, you know, make it. And, you know, I think it would, I know I need to. I don't know why. I'm just kind of like, I don't know why.
Okay, well, I have a mission now. You have your mission, I have my mission.
You know, I think it's, you know, it'll happen, you know. I'm excited to do things like this. You know what I mean? Really, it's like, to me, this is the moments that will carry on us for a very long mm-hmm. time, you know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of all we're trying to do. We're just all making records. of our moments, you know, and that's cool enough, man. That's enough. You know, there's a lot of life outside of music. There's a lot of life outside of playing shows or traveling or, you know, there's a lot of things, man, that make us all up, you know. And
oh, yeah. Well, we both know that. All those other things outside of music, especially if you're blessed to enjoy a lot of other things in life, of course you bring it back to the music.
Yes. You know, and right. It makes the music better.
Exactly.
It makes it so much better. You know, it's like, that's the one thing, you know, like cooking, you know, we talked about this, you know, and it's like cooking food is like making music.
Absolutely.
It's the closest, I mean, you're like taking these.
It's an art.
You're taking these ingredients, these songs, notes, everything, and you're just putting them into this one bite.
But you're changing it here and there.
Yeah.
This inspires something. Oh, let me put a little bit more of that. Yeah.
And that's the spice, you know.
More garlic, more butter, more onions.
It's the spice of life, you know. And in Louisiana, oh man, we got it all. You know, we got. There's so many avenues to the music, you know, that's, right. Like you say, family, food, friends, all these things, you know.
I want the listeners to know, like, if they don't already follow you, because you do have a lot of loyal followers and listeners, but if someone wants to know more about Crystal Ball, how do they do it? Got a website or online stuff?
Yeah, I have a website that is thechrisleblancband.com.
So you got to get the.
Yeah, the, yeah. that gives an idea of kind of where it's at. I know if you Google my name, Chris LeBlanc, there's another country artist out there, maybe in Canada. But I'm the only one that looks like this. But that's kind of a way to it. And then all the social media, you know.
Facebook,
Spotify, Instagram. All of that. You know, I think nowadays if you put someone's name in Google search, something's going to come up.
Right.
But you know, I go out. I still go play a lot of shows. I do a few different things. It's kind of like oftentimes I'll go out with just acoustic guitar and singing these tunes, a lot of tunes. And
do you still work with pretty often with a four piece?
Yeah, I have I'll work with a band that's bass player, drummer, and depending on what I want to hear, that fourth person.
Right,
you know,
right.
I always love the go to. Chuck Berry tenor sax man, or those are always fun, you know.
Yeah.
And then you, I'm trying to get you to come out and play with me,
it's
but
not
you're
hard, man.
You're
it's
so
not hard.
Busy, you're so good. But you know, it's like these moments where I really, you know, I'm going to continue on this path, you know, of going and playing, and going and meeting people, you know. I thought that in the early days of, you know, doing music, it was about a career in music, and it was always about people.
Yeah.
It's always about people. It's never about, like, what your career is going to do for you or something. It's never about that.
I don't know about you, man, but because we're the same age, and
so
we've been at it for a long time. And I don't know, at a certain point, I feel like music is, I do it. But it's like everything that I do in life is kind of through that filter. It's like I almost think in music all the, regardless of what I'm doing.
Right.
Like it's always just part of my, you know, operation.
It is.
You know, you never really, I never feel like I get out of music.
No.
You know what I mean? Whether it's, you know, or gigging or not.
Right.
I'm always thinking about it.
Yeah, you always, exactly.
You know, and sometimes it can be a curse. Like I'll be listening to something like, oh man, so he went to the five, but then he went to the, you know.
I know, right?
We get in the weeds, really.
Trying to break it down, you know.
Which is the joy of it.
Yeah, man, that's always been like, that's the operation. You're trying to always kind of hear that. And we were listening to, I was listening to some Beatles last night again, and like, and just knowing like that John and Paul were these thoughts and this stuff, they were so, how two minds together are, it always is so in multiplicity like that, where it's like when there's that mission to like challenge the, where are we going? And you're making it up along the way.
Right.
It's like, wow.
Yeah.
It is so beautiful. It's like, it is so beautiful, man. It's like the most beautiful relationship you could ever have.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
To be in the, performing is amazing. But also just when you're writing, or just being in the creative process itself.
Yeah.
Can be so fulfilling and, of course, challenging, but just the process itself, enjoying that.
Yeah.
So that can be really fulfilling.
Yeah, man, no doubt, man. Growing and learning and, yeah, sharing it.
Well, look, man, I want to thank you again for being here, this. Anytime I don't get to hang with you that much, and shame on me for not making that happen more.
I mean, dude, we're all busy fellas, busy time in your life, man, it's like so much going on. But it's such a pleasure to be with you, man. I mean it, man.
Likewise. And anytime I get to hear you, the other night I happened to walk. I didn't know you were playing. I don't think I did. And I walked in. I was like, oh, man, this is a treat.
It was sweet, man. And those guys are so good.
And you were
good.
With a killer band, all friends. And, wonderful time.
Such a blessing, man.
Well, let's play them out on a tune, another one of yours. So what's this going to be?
This is one called Mojo Man. It's kind of cool. It's like a little groove that we do. A three, a four. Hey. Yes, sir. I grew up rocking with Chess Records, Bo Diddley's biggest fan, just like Muddy Waters say, I'm a mojo man. It all came from Louisiana, James Booker's native land, Jerry Lee is a killer, he's a mojo man. Oh, I got lightning in a bottle, got magic in my hand, I ain't afraid of the devil, I'm a mojo man, yeah, I'm a mojo man. All the swampers know a secret, it's the Cajun hoodoo band, caught up in the bayou country, I'm a mojo man. Well, I got lightning in a bottle, I got magic in my hands, and I ain't afraid of the devil, I'm a mojo man. Mojo man, oh, I'll put the mojo on him now.
The Arts Council of Greater Baton Rouge would like to acknowledge our generous sponsors, the Shell Corporation, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Louisiana Office of Cultural Development, and the City of Baton Rouge.